Hello and welcome to Ireland Life on Manx Radio. I'm Dave Moore, and my very special guest over the next half hour or so is the founder of Bushy's Brewery, Martin Brinchfeiler. Welcome to the programme, and I think I'll be right in calling you the founder of Bushy's Brewery.
Yep, that's pretty well how I'm known these days, Dave. Yep.
Yeah. So the reason we're talking is because it is 40 years since Bushy's Brewery began. So an incredible landmark, I suppose.
It is. No, I have to pinch myself that, it certainly makes you feel old. But, it was almost exactly within a month or so, it was 40 years ago, that I first did the first brew in the basement of the old pub. And it seems, there was no big plan or anything, but yeah, it's just sort of evolved since then. And as you say, 40 years.
So that was 1985. So just before we get to that, because obviously you're not from the Isle of Man.
No.
And the surname Brinchfeiler is certainly not Manx.
No, no, that's right.
And it kind of has that mid-morning kind of feel about it.
That's
so,
right.
So what is your origin then?
So my grandparents on my father's side were Swiss, and they moved to England in the sort of 1920s, early 20s, for the textile trade. So that's, they moved to Manchester. And my mother's side, they were all Welsh. So I'm a complete
mongrel,
yeah. And so my father was born in England, and as was I was born in Manchester, same as my dad. We've moved around the country. When my dad was in textiles, we moved around, sort of all around the north and the south, and we'd been in lots of different places. It was back in the mid-70s, Dad was involved with setting up a textile factory on the island, and that's how we first came to visit the Isle of Man on holiday, which was it was known as Castle Industries down at Ronaldsway. No, it meant that we used to come over on holiday and frequently visit. And my sister Nikki, as a result, she actually came and she was the first to move to the Isle of Man. Her first job was working where she was painting those little ceramic figures at Shebeg Pottery on the Ballymoder. So that was her first holiday job when she was, I think she was doing her A-levels at the time. Mm. But I'd been a chef, and I'd been working around different places. I'd literally just finished in Australia. Nikki was about to take on the lease at the old, it was called Zhivago's Bar at the time, which was in the old Yates's Wine Lodge at the Grand Hotel. So it's where Tower Insurance is nowadays, right by the clock, by the Jubilee clock. She was taking over the lease of that business, and she asked if I'd come over and make some snacks for her opening weekend. It wasn't part of a big plan. It was it was only ever intended to be a weekend. I suppose after the first weekend, she asked if I'd just stay on until she and her boyfriend got on their feet, and somehow it's
the longest weekend of
but it's funny, you know, the Isle of Man. I know I've met a few people who've got similar stories, and the Isle of Man, it just gets you. It's one of those places. I've worked in some wonderful places around the world, but the Isle of Man, it just ticks all my boxes. And it's, you know, I loved all those other places, but the Isle of Man, to me, it's head and shoulders above anywhere else.
Was that the first time you'd been to the island?
No, we'd been over a couple of times on holiday as kids, and I also came over a couple of times with friends to visit Nikki when we had mopeds. So I'd have been 16 at the time, because I certainly wouldn't have wanted to ride those tiny mopeds any longer than I had to. So, no, we knew the island in many ways. Yeah, I think especially, you know, with the TT and everything, it was obviously a very special place for lads who rode bikes. It was a very good move.
You mentioned that you were a chef.
Yes.
Because I happen to know this. You were trained by Robert Carrier.
So
tell me about that.
I mean,
tell me about him as well. We know who Robert Carrier is, but at the time, he was like arguably the most famous chef in the world.
Well, he was very well known. He was an American, a sort of gourmet. He had a very popular cookery series.
That's right.
There was him
and there's the Galloping Gourmet.
The Galloping Gourmet. But Robert Carrier, he was very popular. He had a very fashionable restaurant in London, in Islington, which is where I worked. He also had a cookery school out in Suffolk, which had its own. It was in a hall, Hintlesham Hall, it was called, and they had their own herb garden. And we used to get all the fresh herbs brought into London a couple of times a week. It was a very interesting place to work. Lots of, it was full of celebrities and famous people who used to eat there. And it was a good experience.
And before we move on to Bushies, do you have dual nationality?
Yes, because of my dad's Swiss connections, that actually means that we all, there were four kids, so there were two boys, two girls, and we all qualified to get Swiss passports as well as our British passports. Yeah, so we are dual nationals. Funnily enough, I think I probably have told you, Dave, that when I was working in Zurich as a chef, again, I had no idea, this thing came out of the blue. It was two days after my 19th birthday when I was working there. This thing came through the post saying you need to come for your medical to do the military service, which I honestly thought they'd made a mistake, and so I had to attend the hotel I was working at. They said no, you need to go and see them. Anyway, there was no mistake. They said no, and I said, well, there might be a problem because of my lack of Swiss German and everything, and they just stamped. I said no problem, and infantry. So that was me. I was tied up then for the next 17 weeks. That's how long the basic training is in the Swiss Army. I had to, I hated it. It was, it's just not me. I'm not.
There was nothing, no benefits. We hear people say,
honestly, I promised myself at the time I would never look back on it with fondness. It was a hard. In some ways, if there are benefits, it's a good leveller because, it levels up. People from all backgrounds have to do it, and it certainly it keeps a level playing field for people. But no, it was hard graft. I went in February actually, and I came out in June. And honestly, that was it. I'd had enough. I had to leave Switzerland at that point. I'd been it broke me.
What was it? The marching up and down with the Swiss Army knife.
Oh yeah, I mean there was some serious marching.
Corkscrew out.
There was some serious marching. You had to do it with full heavy heavy kit. They had a thing they called the survival week, where you had to sort of replicate living in a nuclear bunker underground for a week, and that was hard going. They replicated what it would be like if you're having to wear a gas mask the whole time and everything. Serious stuff. But yeah, it was very interesting, but I could no way could I say it was enjoyable.
So we'll come back to Bushies then, and yes, into Shivargos. Yes. And so how was the progression from helping out making sandwiches to brewing your first?
Well, interestingly, one of the things which Nikki asked for at the time was she wanted to put proper cask-conditioned beer in the pub, which the place didn't have at the time. Shivargos, it only had pressurised keg beer. I didn't have much to do with the decision making at that point, but they felt that they had to be considered a proper pub on the circuit. You needed proper beer, and she'd had experience using cask conditioned beer because she used to run the Flying Club in Rollsway. She did that for a few years, so she'd had experience looking after the beer. But neither of the breweries on the island at the time would supply it. At the time, it was Ockels and there was Castletown. They were the only two breweries, and neither of them would let her have it, which was very disappointing. But I suppose we had to sort of decided we didn't want to give up on that. Mm. That's, I suppose, when we started thinking about making our own. Because when I'd lived in London, in Bayswater, not far from where I was living, there was a pub called the Frog and Firkin. There was a chain of about a dozen Firkin pubs in London. That was their sort of selling point, was they used to brew their own beer in the basement. And I used to love the Frog and Firkin. It was a special pub. I think that was the sort of inspiration, the thought of making our own. But it was still very early days, and we had to do an awful lot of background research and everything. But by coincidence, an ex-neighbour of ours from Lancashire was a retired brewer, and he was developing a mini brewery with the students up in Lancaster University. And it was just a chance conversation that my dad had with this very nice chap called Peter Cole. He was a well-respected brewer in his time. No, he mentioned that he had this mini brewery, and Dad asked if he thought he might be able to set something up on the Isle of Man. Peter came over. There were huge cellars in the basement of the old Yates's Wine Lodge in Victoria Street. He came over and had a look. The only real drawback there was that the cellars used to flood on a high tide. So that was one of the things we had to overcome when we were actually sort of doing the drawing up the plans to make it work. But Peter, yeah, he set up the system. One of the very important roles he played was he persuaded the people at Customs and Excise that we knew what we were doing. Because I clearly didn't. Mm. I was just totally being led by Peter. But no, he persuaded them that, you know, it was all legitimate. He was having all the experience he had. He very sort of persuasive and convincing. And that's basically how it started.
You mentioned something there. I don't know if you remember a conversation we both had back in the late 80s. I'd lived in London and came back to the island, and you said, where did you live? And I said, Bayswater. Yeah. And you said, oh, Bayswater, yeah. Whereabouts? I said, oh, near Queensway. I don't know if you remember this.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, and you said, oh, near Queensway. And then I said, whereabouts? I said, oh, Queensborough Terrace. Yeah. And you said, oh, and you lived on Queensborough Terrace like I had, but I think you were like 44 or something, or I was number 10 or 12.
Yeah.
You were down the other end, I think.
When I was in Queensborough Terrace, that was one of the hotels. The other hotel I worked at was the Connaught.
Yeah.
The Connaught Hotel. And that's where their staff quarters were, in Queensborough Terrace. Yeah. So, no, that was amazing. That was a real real coincidence that we actually lived in the same street. But, so that was how the mini brewery got going.
So it was based downstairs in Shivargo's, as it was at the
time.
Because I can remember seeing barrels floating around it on the high tide down there. It was like a little catacombs, wasn't it?
Yeah,
below the building.
There were sort of vaulted arches down there, and we had to build our kit. We had to build a walkway
for the high tide.
For the high tides, we had to build a walkway so that in case there was a high tide. Customs and Excise were very accommodating, because I don't know if everyone would have done this, but one of the things, because of these high tides, we had to provide waders. Like, you know, you see these people in the middle of rivers fly fishing, but so we had a set of waders so that if there had been a high tide, customs could still come and see, because one of the rules of brewing is the customs and excise have to have access 24 hours a day to come and check in case there's anything going on that they're not happy with. So they were very accommodating in letting us do that.
The brewing laws are different in the Isle of Man than they were to England.
That's right.
So was that an obstacle, or was it a benefit?
No, it wasn't an obstacle really.
And what's the difference as well?
Well, in the Isle of Man's beer purity laws, they only permit the use of malted barley, sugar, hops and yeast and water. So those are the five permitted ingredients. In the UK or elsewhere, you can use all sorts of cheaper ingredients. It's normally accountants who force these things. I've always thought that the beer purity law is a very good marketing tool for the Isle of Man, and I think that's how we viewed it. Peter Cole, the question I suppose he asked us is what type of beer would we want? And at the time, the Bushies, this was before Bushies, but Shivargo's, especially during the TT and the Manx Grand Prix, one of the biggest selling beers was Newcastle Brown Ale. And without really thinking it through, I said, well, I explained that Newquay Brown was a very popular brew. I said, would you be able to help us with anything like that? So Peter went away and came back with a recipe which complied with the island's beer laws, so you know it was all very done with that in mind, and that was the one that became our first beer, which is Old Bushy Tail.
So how did old Bushytail become old Bushytail? Because obviously there's a fox link and there are no foxes in the Isle of Man. So where did this come from?
Well, at the time, we got to know a lovely fella who was a graphic designer called Charlie Cannell. But some people might remember him. He was married to Brenda Cannell, who was a politician on the island. It was mainly, I think, we got to know him because he was a musician, as was Brenda, and he played bass in the...
Night shift.
Well done.
Thank you.
You've got a good memory. They played in our big room, and it must have just been chance conversation, and we knew that we wanted to come up with a name and an image for this new beer, and it was Charlie who sort of came up. That's right, at the time we had a couple of stuffed foxes in the bar. One of them was it was the top of a fox coming out of a beer barrel, and he had a tankard in his hand, and on the side of the barrel and we've still got this barrel. It said, "E, I'm having a wonderful time." So anyway, I think it must have just caught Charlie's eye while we were talking. He sort of said, "Well, would you consider a fox theme?" And as you say, there are no foxes in the Isle of Man, and I said, "Well, yeah, maybe." You know, I think we were totally open to suggestions. He came back with this idea of, well, wasn't certain it would be bushies, because he had an idea of foxies, but he also had bushies. He had these conceptual drawings of bushies, the fox with his beer, old bushy tail, with a thought and with a few sketches and a few suggested images. And I have to say, if I'm being honest, it didn't really do it for me. Everybody else, though, who saw it, thought it was fantastic. So I said, well, I was very happy just to go with the flow, which I've done an awful lot through the years. I'm always happy to go with other people's opinions. So, yeah, that's how it basically started. It was Charlie Cannell's idea of Bushy the Fox, the Isle of Man's only fox who brewed his own beer. But Charlie was very busy at the time, and I think he went on after that to become the main artist at the Manx Museum. He didn't have time to devote to this, so he introduced us to another musician who was another wonderful graphic designer called John Herdman. Everyone knew him as Herdy. So Charlie basically handed over his concepts and his artwork to Herdy. And yeah, it was Herdy who sort of brought Bushy the Fox to life. He gave him facial expressions and everything that people recognise. And yeah, Herdy, he did everything for us for the next 21 years.
Wow.
Which, it was a wonderful experience working with Herdy. And he was a very skilled sign writer as well, and cartoonist. I mean, he was an all-rounder. He used to have a weekly cartoon in the, I think it was
the Manx Independent, I think.
It was the Independent.
And the Gazette,
And
maybe?
The Gazette, yeah. It was. I think you're right. I think it was both of those. Charlie's initial idea, but Herdy sort of took the character on. And, I was going to say we lost Herdy in 2007, much too soon. But anyway, his legacy carries on.
At this point, what was your role within the pub?
Good question. Well, by the time I'd started brewing, things were a little bit quiet.
I wanted to mention that because it wasn't a success story from the off.
No.
You know, it was, you know...
It was a very slow start. Mm. The bar itself...
This is the pub we're talking about, yeah, not the beer.
This is just the pub. Mm. Shivargo's bar, it was, I have to say, it was very quiet initially. I mean, there were some nights not one person walked through the door. Because it was October when she took over. And through that winter, it was desperately quiet.
Pubs closed at 10 as well.
They were early closing, and it was a tough time. But one of the things that I spotted, there was a pub in London which I used to in Bayswater, which you might have. It was called the Moscow Arms.
Yeah, I remember.
It was a bit of a backpackers pub. But there was a decent pub, but it wasn't, you know, it was just used to tick over. But they had a barmaid, an American barmaid there, part-time. Her main job, she ran a little record shop. And I don't know how it came about, but she was called Suzanne. They gave her the job of stocking the jukebox in the Moscow Arms. And it absolutely transformed the pub, because, you know, at the time, most places, they just used to put on a, you just put the, you know, the chart, current chart hits. It was a bit, they were always a bit dull. But no, she sort of specialised in a bit more, you know, edgy, a bit edgier music, a bit punkier, a little bit more new wave or goth. And the pub, over a month or two, it just was transformed. And that sort of that stuck with me, really, to see how she'd managed to she'd have such a
an alternative kind of clientele.
Is exactly. That, yeah, alternative clientele. I'm not saying that that was necessarily the intended aim, but no, I just thought so. I took charge of the jukebox. And I don't know, it's a no-brainer, really. You just put on music that people might want to hear. And I think it was at that time that that you there was probably, I'm guessing, around a dozen or so friends who people who you all took an interest in your music. And I'd like to think that between us, you know, because I was always happy to take suggestions on the jukebox, but I'd like to think that had a big bearing on the direction that the pub took. But I'd definitely say the jukebox was a huge influence. I think there were a couple of pubs closing at the time, popular pubs, well, pubs that I liked. It was the New Strand, the Legs of Man.
That's right,
and I think the Dog's Home might have been closing. That might have been a bit later.
But the other ones, and also on Victoria Street, you had the Salisbury, Shakespeare. They went, the Star had gone by then, by the Dogs.
It had.
Yeah.
No, the Theatre Royal, that was another nice little pub. So there were people, as these pubs closed, there were people looking for other, you know, places to go. And I think we just happened to be in the right place at the right time. It was just a happy series of, I don't know if it was coincidences, but yeah, it all seemed to dovetail together.
And then Old Bushytail was being sold.
That's right. So it was January 86 that the beer, we couldn't get it ready just in time for Christmas in 85. But it was early January in 86 that it first went on sale, just in one bar. What we'd done within the Zhivago's bar, we'd just christened one little bar as Bushy's Bar. And we had a lovely barmaid, Mary Broderick. She had the sort of job of trying to convert people onto this new beer. It was a bit stronger, 4.5%, so it was a bit stronger.
Like 3.8 was the, I think.
3.8 is our standard bitter. But Bushytail was 4.5, and Mary had this to sort of almost dare people to try the stronger brew. And Mary did a wonderful job for us. As I said, it was literally just one pump in one bar. That was the one probably for a good 6 months or so. But there were people who didn't want to have quite so strong, till that's when we introduced Bushy's Bitter, which was a 3.8%, more of a session beer. Probably that was roughly about 6 months later. And Bushy's Bitter went on to become our biggest seller.
Mm. How were the other breweries on the island? Were they accommodating?
It's a funny one. Yes and no. We had a bit of... I think they were so aloof, and they were just so they just shrugged their shoulders. But interestingly, there was a time, I think it was around this time, that Castletown and Ockles got together. They merged, and they came up with this new entity, which was Isle of Man Breweries. During the merger, they actually shut the Castletown brewery and switched everything up to the Falcon Brewery in Douglas. They came in for a lot of criticism in the press at the time, and I do know that they'd actually, when people were saying you've got a monopoly, because they actually went from having Castletown were exactly half the size of Ockles. They had 35 pubs, Ockles had 70. So they had over 100 pubs now between them. Basically, as I said, the press and a lot of the public were very... they were very angry about this monopoly. And apparently it was written somewhere that they said, no, it isn't a monopoly. There's that little Bushy fella. he's providing some alternatives. So I think, you know, on one hand, we might have been fairly useful to try and say there wasn't a monopoly. But yeah, but we were at that point, we were the third brewery on the island. And just little by little, we just nibbled away.
It wasn't just the beer, though. I mean, there was the famous Bushy's Burger and the
food,
you know,
yes.
Yeah, the food.
Yeah,
so, no, which is to Nikki, isn't it?
Yes,
so.
Nikki was, she in the early days, she was looking after the kitchen, and she's a good cook. Yes,
was it her that came up with the Bushy's Burger?
It could have been, yeah. I think between us, we sort of hatched these dishes. And Nikki, she, as I said, she is a good cook, and she came up with some lovely. I think you had tried their curry. She had nice curries.
Amazing, yeah. Chili, I can remember.
Chilies,
yeah. And the lasagna was fantastic.
Yeah. No, but she also she had some very interesting vegetarian food, which was fairly unusual on the island at the time because not many people catered for vegetarians.
Yeah, that's right.
And it was after probably about a year or so, Nikki and things hadn't taken off that well. Nikki decided she wanted to move on, and that's when I pretty well took over the reins. And that's when Nikki went off and started Greens, which she, yeah, I mean, that got its own history. And, yep. She, you know, she was there for a good 20 or so years in the railway station in Douglas. She's made her own mark in hospitality on the island. It was around that time when Ockles and Castletown were merging, if that's the right word, they put a couple of dozen pubs on the market. And these would have been the pubs that needed the most work. They would have been the quietest places or whatever, which is obviously that would be the logical thing to do. And it was at that time that we thought we ought to think about maybe acquiring a couple more of our a couple more pubs to sell our beer.
Had Chivago's become Bushy's by then, or
yes.
Bushy's Brew Pub?
No, yes, that's right. By this point,
and you were now a success.
It was.
You were now making money.
Well, yeah. To make your own beer on the premises, they always say that yes, it will add a decent amount to the bottom line, until you decide to employ someone. So if as long as the landlord's doing it himself or somebody on the staff is doing it, then you can make money. But the moment you employ a full-time brewer, that's pretty well all your any of your profits gone. So I brewed for nearly 5 years, and it was flat out. We were busy. I was doing the two separate brews. I was brewing pretty well 4 days a week. Plus I was doing the kitchen at that point. And we were doing everything else, you know, that you had to do in running a pub with live bands and everything else. So I'd say that was the busiest I've ever been in my career. It was while we were looking at these pubs that were for sale, we put in a bid for two of them, which they'd put on the market, which were, they were both old Castletown pubs. One was in Castletown, which was known as the Victoria in Maloo Street, which
I remember that.
That
yeah,
was a lovely little back street pub.
Yeah, just next to the junction. Yeah.
Correct. And that was, funnily enough, that was the first pub I ever drank in, because when Nikki lived in Castletown, she lived in Maloo Street. It was just a few doors along from her house. I can tell you now, but I shouldn't have done it. So I was drinking in there very, very underage. It was a lovely pub. So that was one of the pubs we put in a bid for. And the other one was the Albion in Douglas, which was another lovely little backstreet pub, which I'd always liked. They were both very modest. So they were in the sort of price range that we thought we could stretch to. In theory, we should have acquired both those pubs. But I have to say, we didn't put the bids in our own name. We got our accountants to place the bids on our behalf. The boss of the brewery at the time was a chap who I got on fine with, called Eddie Arden. He'd said on a few occasions in interviews that he didn't like to see empire builders on the Isle of Man. So I think he'd made it clear that had he known it was Bushy's looking at these, he'd have vetoed them. The sales, we thought they were going through on both, but unfortunately the Vic in Castletown, it was held up. There was an electrical substation behind it. And through red tape, there was a bit of a hold-up getting the rights of way or whatever. And at that point, somebody somewhere, as happens on the island, on any small community, the word got out. And they tried to pull the plug on both. Anyway, the Albion had gone through. That had already completed. But the Vic, because it had held up, it didn't go through. And they pulled the plug and it never opened again, which to me was very sad. But anyway, yes, so the Albion, I renamed it. And it's some people weren't happy with me doing that. The Albion's had, it had had several names over the years. Before the Albion, it was the Cross Keys. And it had a, I can't remember, there was another name. So it hadn't, it's not like it had always been the Albion. But yeah, so I, in a bit of an indulgence, I named it after my favourite football team, Blackburn Rovers. So I called it the Rovers Return.
And it's a Coronation Street thing as well.
And that, it's a Coronation Street thing, but that wasn't really my... that wasn't my influence, it was the football one.
And also because the fact that you were looking forward to Rovers returning well, to exactly. the top
well,
five.
Well, that was my dream, because at the time I think we were probably, Blackburn Rovers were probably only in the, they might have been in the second division at that time. We'd have dropped down to the third in several occasions, but yes, it was a dream, which, yeah, eventually came true.
I've been told that the Albion, the building, is the second oldest building in Douglas, is that right?
Well, it's a toss-up between that, when you say building, certainly pub, I think it's a toss-up between the Saddle on the quay and the Albion. Mm. Yeah, I mean, if around the back of the Albion or the Rovers, when you walk through the corridor, there you can see the sort of, in the floor, you can see where it would have been stayed.
Yeah, because I know the Saddle, that's where the Saddle gets your name, because there were actually horses saddled there, weren't
there?
There
will have been. Yeah. And you can see that it would have been where stables would have been at the back of the at the Albion or the Rovers. I think the oldest building in Douglas is what used to be Scott's Bistro.
Or Isola.
Mm. And that's another lovely old building. So, yeah, it's a historic part of town.
From then on, when did eventually move the brewing out of there?
It was when, after these couple of dozen pubs had been put on the market by Oakles and Castletown, that it sort of made us think, and I'd, as I said, I was flat out brewing in the basement. It just made us wonder if there could have been, you know, the opportunity to expand. And that's, yeah, we basically thought that sounded like a good plan. So we looked around. We went to Peter Cole again, our the guy who helped us set up in the first place, just to take his advice. And we tracked down some brewing equipment in a brewery that had gone bust in Brighton. And it was lovely equipment, and it was all very high spec, sort of detailed, engineered. And we had to make a very quick decision because somebody, it was on its way to America if we hadn't managed to decide what to do with it. So we had a very quick weekend down in Brighton just to have a look at it. It meant nothing to me, really. I was taking the advice of the experts. But yeah, and we acquired it almost at scrap value because at that time there was a lot of surplus equipment around at the time. So we bought ourselves a brewery, but we had nowhere to put it. So we had to basically put this equipment in storage for nearly a year, or more than a year, until we found premises on the island. Looked around all sorts of places, and it was eventually when the site out at Mount Murray became available. It was an old milking parlour, and it did have a house attached, which, and 7 acres of woods, which we didn't really need any of that, but that was part of the package, so we had to go with the whole site. But so that would have been sort of late 80s, about 89 88 89, and the brewery opened in September 1990.
That's, so that became the Hop Garden.
That it eventually the house by the road became the Hop Garden. Our focus was getting the brewery open initially, and that's where we've been now. It will have been 35 years.
Just one thing just sprung to mind. I remember Simon Buttermore and the horse-drawn beer.
Yes.
That, but I think only one keg at the time.
That was early 90s.
That was up at the Hop Garden, wasn't he, going up?
He might have tried that. Simon was a wonderful, another ex-musician, and he used to have a DJ night in the old Bushes concert room. But anyway, Simon, he sort of was a bit of a sort of rural, I wouldn't call him a farmer, but he... In amongst what he had a couple of lovely horses, an open wagon, and he suggested that he could help us deliver the beer. As you say, knowing Simon, he wouldn't have been put off by Richmond Hill or anything like that. But no, we couldn't put him through that. Mm. So we had an arrangement where we used to drop off the beer at Green's, at the railway station. And we used to help Simon load up, and then he would just take it around the quayside. And to the, so there were a couple of pubs on the quay, and there'd be the Rovers. And we had, I think it was, I think the TARDIS was going at that point. And so that was Simon's job. It was only on a Friday. But no, I mean, I was thinking about it. We got some, we got a couple of nice pictures of Simon delivering his beer. But I honestly don't think in this day and age, the I don't think with people's short tempers and in increased traffic, I don't think people would put up with
it. Even though it's net zero friendly, isn't it?
Well, it's so, very green. But by the same token, the traffic jams he used to cause on a Friday, I just don't think people would tolerate it anymore. But it, that was a lovely, yeah, that was a lovely chapter.
We're running out of time. One thing I do have to mention is the comedy club. The pub was not just Chivago's. You become Brushy Brew Pub at this point, and you had the big room,
the concert room. Yes, it was a 200 capacity concert room at the back. It was Frank Sidebottom. He was the first comedian, if you like, who came over. He was it was very, I mean, completely wacky, but it was Frank Sidebottom's manager, Mike the manager, Mike Doherty, because he'd gone down so well, he suggested that we have a word with an agency who specialised in up-and-coming stand-up comics.
Who went on to become some very, very big names.
Big names, yes. Mm. I mean, no, I mean, looking back now, it was, we had Jack D, Joe Brand. There were several, Lee Evans, who's he was another big name, and loads of others who went on to do different things, Hattie Hayridge, Jeremy Hardy. That was another very good chapter, which,
But you said you got it wrong, really. The one thing you did get wrong about it was...
I was putting them on too frequently. We had them on weekly, and I think if we'd managed to sort of string them out once a month, I think it would have continued longer. But unfortunately, no, people, we couldn't make it pay in the end, and we had to knock it on the head.
We're going to try and bring this as much as up to date now, so because I mean, you eventually more pubs, the Duck's Nest, which became the Sidings.
Exactly, that was one of the
and the Bay.
The Bay has been, I suppose that some would say that's been our flagship, or certainly alongside the Rovers, the Bay in Port Erin.
I remember the two old dears who worked in the sidebar of the Bay.
Lovely old ladies. No, the Bay was a big job. It had been closed for between 10 and 12 years before, when we actually acquired it. It was through my wife Debbie that that we managed to get permission to talk to the owners. And that's been a lovely pub to run. So it's been an amazing story, really.
There's been so many. I mean, there were so many things we mentioned. I want to just very briefly mention, without mentioning names, there's the night the police called you at Bushy's. The one when the alarm had gone off.
The alarm, yes. I think I was living up above the Rovers at the time, and I got a call to say that the alarms had been activated at the old Bushy's pub. Yeah, so I had to sort of go down fairly bleary-eyed, and there were a couple of coppers standing outside when I got there, and I had to open up. And it was a bit strange because I opened it was a padlock on the front, which meant that somebody, if there was, I think we assumed it was a false alarm. But as it happens, the person who got in must have got in through the back, through a window at the rear. And we were walking through the premises, and I think that's right, the power had gone, and we were using our torches. And we were just rummaging around up in the office, and there was, all of a sudden in the dark, this big copper, he screamed and jumped back. And he'd actually touched the face of this burglar who was in there. And everyone, once they'd settled down, we pinned him down, and the police sort of said to him, what's your name? And I won't give you his name, he's still around. And he said, and what do you do? He said, I'm a cat burglar. And that was his, that was his job description. And that was a very memorable night.
We're going to have to wrap things up. Nowadays, you are no longer the owner of Bushy's Brewery.
No, it was, 2022, I think that was. We were acquired by a couple from Castletown who've done amazing things with us, really. They're taking us places I couldn't have dreamt. And but I've, as I think I said, I've stayed on. I've stayed on pretty well doing the same sort of role. All the lads at the brewery, Curly, who's been there 35 years, he's there with his team. No, nothing's changed. And we have got some very exciting plans. We're going to be completely moving the brewery to Castletown, into a new site. It's happening, but it's there are a couple of little hiccups slowing things down. But that's going to be a state-of-the-art brewery with a visitor's centre and a restaurant, bar and gift shop. So, yeah, it's very exciting.
And there's a book.
Correct. So we're in the process of just putting the finishing touches to a book. I haven't actually... it's been put together with myself and John Quirk, who's done a few other books, on local books. We've got a working title of Bushy's 40 Years of Blood, Sweat and Beers. I think it's going to be very interesting, sort of covering all these stories that I've mentioned today. And there'll be lots of pictures and interesting things for people to, you know, for hopefully a nice trip down memory lane.
Yeah, there's so many that we didn't even mention the TARDIS, did we? But yeah, anyway.
Yeah, the TARDIS, which obviously you were very, very influential running the TARDIS. But it's been amazing for 40 years, really.
Fantastic. Martin, thank you so much.
No, thank you,
Dave. Well done for 40 years of top-class brewing.
Thank you very much, Dave. All the best.